we wondered whether or not it might be interesting to this Congress to do anything progressive, to recommend anything to anybody. So we had a committee merely appointed, merely to review some material which might or might not be taken up at the Congress, and the results of that committee's opinions and so forth boiled down to the fact that they thought this Congress might not be tremendously averse to memorializing the government to this effect. We, the Congress on Human Problems, held at the Royal Festival Hall, do hereby find for and subscribe to the following memorial. That as there exist today better methods of treatment for the sick and the insane than are being used generally, that the government appoint a commission of impartial non-medical personnel to survey the exact results of treatment used in the separate fields of healing, and that the commission then recommend to the government any needful changes in the usages of healing personnel or treatments to the gain of better national health and ability. And we do appoint our committee to memorialize the government to this effect. Now, that was simply just so a group of people meeting might put themselves on record to some extent or another. The committee thought this was a very good idea, so I put this up to you. Do you think that is a good idea?
Yes.
In a small explanation of this, you must realize that a tremendous amount of money is being spent today in various countries, not only Great Britain, without anybody establishing what the money is to be spent for. There's a very odd thing, but we in Scientology do have a political principle. I'm sorry that we're usually not political at all, but we do have a political principle of considerable magnitude, and that is when you spend money, you ought to buy something. This is a new political principle. It's sweeping and revolutionary, completely revolutionary, and it was the thought behind this possible memorial that if a non-medical committee, by the way, which is very possible to assemble in the House of Lords, since they already have existing machinery to do this sort of thing, if such a committee did survey the various fields of healing, they might find in some of the non-orthodox practices some material of considerable interest. Now, naturally, we'd expect that committee to be overwhelmed by the various powers that be, and no, 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 and all that sort of thing. But if a body of evidence was accumulated to this degree, we would at least bring about an effort in the direction of efficiency. Would anybody care to make a motion that we would accept that memorial? Been moved and seconded that this Congress adopt this memorial. Is there any discussion? Well, all those in favor? Good. All those opposed? Very good. Thank you. Then we can assume that this Congress would like to go on record that methods of healing should be investigated further to the betterment of the government expenditures in healing and healing in general. That's right. All right. Very good. There was another proposal which was offered and which was found to be rather unpopular. And that proposal was quite interesting. Its unpopularity existed in the field of failure to understand. Evidently, there isn't too much known at this time concerning radiation, its testing, and the immediate results of radiation on the health of Earth. Evidently, if people of our strata, and do not make any mistake, sometimes people like to slur Scientologists a bit and say that they do not represent this and that, but the truth of the matter is, from the intelligence tests which exist and from the professional ratings and so forth of the individuals in Scientology, you're actually dealing with the upper strata, the intelligentsia of the world. Now, you can look around you and say, oh, no. You can look at me and say, my God, not that. But Scientology represents represents the upper bracket. And if we don't know anything about radiation as a body, if we in general, as Scientologists, are not informed on this particular subject, then don't think that somebody down here in the Chancellor of the Exchequer's office knows anything about it. Don't for a minute think the ambassador to Ceylon knows anything about it. And we are up against something very appalling here. And by recommending this small matter, since all this was just an appointed review committee, to find what's this? In that committee, which was composed by and large of Scientologists, was quite interesting. Quite interesting. This whole subject of radiation is evidently relegated to the category of a highly technical subject, which nobody else knows anything about. Now, it may or may not be that radiation will eventually wipe out the population of Earth. That may or may not be. But the point is that here is an area that is a total blank on the subject of healing. Although some studies have been made concerning radiation, I cannot guarantee either the sensibleness of those studies, nor their findings, nor the personnel which conducted them. This is quite interesting. You read something, would you like to hear something about this? Would you like to hear something about this? Naturally, because I was educated in the field of atomic physics, which doesn't mean a thing, by the way, it merely meant that I was there by duress. I wasn't really supposed to be there. I was a writer, and I had to go to school just like anybody else, and they said that was what I was taking, and so I obediently sat there and took it, but not very deeply. My field and fort was the field of writing and philosophy. These were my forts, and that was what my interest in reading lay in. But I had to take this. Maybe that's fortunate, maybe it's unfortunate, but to be subjected to this much mathematical discipline and this much extreme duress on the subject of it is this way, even though you couldn't even see the little molecules wiggle. You know, it's very interesting for somebody to tell you that wall is composed entirely of space when, if you bump into it, you hurt yourself to beat the band. You know, and my first reaction to the entire field of nuclear physics, called in those days, not nuclear physics, by the way, but atomic and molecular phenomena, a much wider subject than nuclear physics. Nuclear physics is a small branch of that, was that somebody had better get down and make a study out of this. You know, sooner or later, somebody really ought to go into this subject to stop this nonsense. And it's very interesting that in today's processing, you take almost any preclear, and you tell him to hold the wall still, and after a while he tells you he can't. You say, why not? He says, well, all the molecules that are wiggling in it, all the atoms. Oh, you say, well, hold them still, too. And you say, oh, I can't do that. I can't do that. The whole thing would blow up. You say, go ahead and hold them still anyway, like a good auditor, and follow out the command. Very interesting thing is nothing blows up and his entire physics education blows out. And he has, for the first time, a solid wall. So the whole operation of physics begins to look like an operation. It says everything is built out of holes. An interesting universe in which we live where everything is built out of holes. That means there are no walls. Where everything is in motion. Think of that for a moment. If a thetan for his comfort depends upon a certain amount of stillness and quiet, for a subject to come forward and tell everybody that everything is wiggling all the time, doesn't to me sound like a subject or a science, it sounds like an operation. But it's interesting, you want to make that experiment, you Scientologists, have somebody hold the wall, just grab somebody, particularly an electronics engineer or something like that, and have him hold everything in the wall still, and you'll get rid of his entire education, just like that, boom, gone. And he begins to laugh about it. He realizes that he has been made nervous. all these years by this deep education he had, which taught him that, I don't know if you probably, some of you don't even credit the fact that modern physics tells us that that wall which you see in front of you and which you can kick and so forth is built out of space. And that space is studded with little tiny universes of some kind or another which are in constant motion. And that these are in juxtaposition to each other, distributed through the wall, but they don't have any mass either. They only have motion. Now, that is the principle on which all of this nonsense is built. And you go over there, and you'll find a solid wall. It's very hard for a rational young man. Of course, I wasn't a particularly rational young man. But it was very hard for a young man of myself to absorb this. But I did dutifully. And flunked all my examinations, got the worst grades in the school. The only reason they passed me is they said, Hubbard, we know you will never practice this subject. Therefore, we're going to... Well, that was right back at the first turn of the 30s. And the boys who had studied this subject were known at that time as Buck Rogers boys. Buck Rogers, the comic strip character who space opera, indulged in all sorts of rocket pistols and spaceships and that sort of thing. And there was no demand at all. So actually, they stopped teaching the course about the middle 30s. And it wasn't until, I think, really about 1944 that universities started teaching this subject again, really teaching it. All of the work on the, quote, atomic bomb, unquote, was done for the most part by, I don't know, English professors and so forth. They had run fresh out of nuclear physicists. This is the truth, by the way. There are frankly no nuclear physicists in these projects. There are physicists. But what a vast difference there is between somebody who was a graduate expert on atomic molecular phenomena and a physicist. There's a tremendous difference. Now, in first place, atomic molecular phenomena tells you that the entire subject of physics is a lie. It tells you that all this conservation of energy and that sort of thing. Now, England was really the borning place for this subject. There was a chap that a comet is named after. You know Halley's Comet? Well, this chap Halley did an enormous amount of work with atoms and molecules and theories and that sort of thing. And goes back down through the years. Nearly all of the important work on the subject of nuclear physics is English. It is not American or French or even Italian. Some of the very modern contributions have come from other countries. But it boils down to this. Here was a new subject that suddenly blew into view. Franklin Delano Roosevelt wrote a check for $3 billion. Just like that. That's a nice big check. $3 billion. If Christ, standing on the side of the Sea of Galilee, threw a half crown into the sea every minute, from the moment he was born, straight on forward until now, he would not yet have tossed into the Sea of Galilee $1 billion. That's quite a bit of money. And the government wrote the check out. And the project at that time was cooperative between the English and the American governments. And they up and developed themselves an A-bomb. And they didn't really develop it on paper. They developed it by bars of this and that, and they made a pile, and they tested for critical mass, and they did an empirical job. And all they really know today about atomic fission is simply this. If you get that much plutonium together, it explodes. See, I don't care what their theories are. They tie themselves down with these theories and change them every month. There's nobody quite so adrift as somebody in one of these atomic energy projects. You go around to him and say, what is the current theory? And he laughs kind of weakly. You know, it's like us Scientologists. What's the current process? Well, first and foremost, it is not particularly then a highly specialized subject, since those who are engaged in studying it are, I have to say, very few of them been trained, very few have been trained thoroughly in atomic molecular phenomena. See, there aren't that many people in atomic molecular phenomena. There were probably only somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 or 400 of them in 1933. And then they stopped educating them to a marked degree. And during the war, there was a boom. So what did they fill the boom with? Lord knows. Anybody who came along. As a matter of fact, I got a hold of one of these chaps that was with the Atomic Energy Commission in Washington, and I remembered him from George Washington University, where I went to school. I said, well, I said, what are you doing? And he said, oh, I'm over in the Atomic Energy Commission. I said, what are you doing, correcting their papers or writing their notebooks or something of the sort? Oh, no, he said, I'm scientist, the mathematician on the staff. I said, no. Because this man's major was English. Now, I don't mean to cast any kind of cloud over these chaps. I'm merely trying to tell you only one datum, and that is that very few, if any, including me, know anything about it. The only thing I'm trying to tell you is that it is not a subject which is over here in a safe guarded by a bunch of super-educated scientists, you see. It's not that subject. It is a subject that works because they found that when you took just so much plutonium and put it in position to so much plutonium that it went boom and made other things go boom too. They know that thoroughly, and they also know how to take uranium and refine it and then process it so as to get plutonium. These things they know. Cooks know how to make cakes, you know, but don't ask a cook too much about the theory of flavor. He's liable to give you all sorts of balderdash, and it sounds terribly interesting, but has nothing to do with his making a cake. In other words, I'm trying to tell you that there really is no subject in the world, so far as I know, which is this a subject, atomic radiation, which is nailed down that one group of people know all about. Now, this is the misnomer. Nearly everybody in the world thinks this is a subject that a small group of scientists have well in hand. And each one of those scientists who were pointed at directly think that someplace, somebody's got this subject well in hand. And you go to one branch of the government and you say, how about your atomic energy program? Oh, well, they've got it all in hand over there at such an office. That's fine. So you go over to that office and you say, now, how about your atomic energy program? Oh, that's all in the hands of the Atomic Energy Commission. They have it all under control. And you go over to the Atomic Energy Commission. You say, well, what about the atomic projects you have and all that sort of thing? Oh, everything is just coming along fine. The Army has that all under control. Well, I mean, it's almost this bad. You go around and you don't find any person who is the authority, who does issue the orders, who does issue the cautions and monitor the situation worldwide on the subject of atomic radiation. There's no such boss, either here or in America. It is not that package the subject, don't you see? There are big test projects. There are big bomb explosion projects. And these have medical units. And those medical units are over here in other medical units. And everybody has an opinion that everybody has an opinion. And it's not one of these precise spheres of nailed-down knowledge. It just isn't. One of the chaps in the Naval Aircraft Plant at Philadelphia one time, whose name you probably know because he's a very famous science fiction writer, Robert A. Heinlein. Robert A. Heinlein said, someday somebody is going to lose the slip of paper of how many things they piled up in the last pile, and there will go the United States. Now, it isn't that people are handling this carelessly, but just as you consider this a specialized subject, so do all of them consider this a specialized subject. And just as you suppose that everybody certainly has a grip on this except yourself, so does everybody suppose that everybody has a grip on this except themselves. You get how a subject like that could go out from under? Now, in the field of radiation, Actually, I see in some of your faces you say it couldn't possibly be that bad. Well, it's not that bad. It's worse. If you have everybody believing, it's this matter of agreement. What is reality? It's everybody's agreement. If everybody has agreed this subject is under control, and nobody has this subject under control, you would get a very interesting world situation. Don't you think you would? Well, I just look across the audience here and I see a young man who just took a course in medical atomic radiation. What can you do for somebody who's been atomized, somebody who's been exposed to this sort of thing? And undoubtedly, there was lots of data given in the course, but it adds up to Lord knows how much equipment per patient. So if you had a couple of hospitals full of equipment, you could treat one patient. But in a time of disaster, of atomic radiation, everybody's patients, and there is maybe just enough equipment to treat one or two at a time. This is not then an adequate answer. Now, last February, we tried to get some answer to this question, and I went appetite over tin cup as a result. Too much radiation exposure. Fascinating that there doesn't seem to be, even in Scientology, a good answer to it. The human body is simply allergic to this stuff called atomic radiation. It's just allergic to it, that's all it is. Its ridges are actually, its standing electronic ridges and so on, are actually built around burned out radiation. Radiation is evidently very common to the track of the genetic entity. Radiation is evidently a well-known subject on the backtrack. It's not something new, and everybody's scared of it. And that's why everybody's perfectly willing to say, there is a terminal over there that knows all about it, but I'm here. Do you see this reasoning? They know there is a lion loose in the woods, but they're perfectly content that perfectly adequate and well-trained keepers are after him. Only the persons who are telling you this are the people who ought to be the keepers. Now, to a large degree, the amount of care that has been exhibited in experimentation and so forth has been adequate, in that not any vast number of people have been injured. And after its first furious use in Japan, it has not subsequently done anything very much to anybody. But atomic radiation today is one of the little known, only slightly controlled subjects that confront man, and is the one thing which poses an end to his time track. Very little is known. I stress that point. Very little is known. There would have to be a tremendous amount of study. I'll give you an example of that. I met a young man. He was part of an atomic project. He ran into me, and the government had whistled in my direction very early in these endeavors, and I'd say, what are you going to do with atomic radiation? They said, I'm going to build bombs. And I said, that's a nice, sane attitude. Look somewhere else. I won't have any hand in it. And oddly enough, nearly every other atomic physicist of note, not myself, because I'm not an atomic physicist of note, I'm a writer, just happened to get in on it. And nearly every one of these chaps has now backed out. They have backed out because they see that it is dangerous, and they don't feel that they themselves can do anything about it. They feel helpless. This is chaps like Eisenhower. Even before his death, Einstein had. Do you know Einstein was putting ads in newspapers and using his own funds to try to get the world conscious of the fact that he had let a real lion loose in its midst? Now, there is something interesting. It was Einstein who told Franklin Delano Roosevelt that he could build a bomb which would destroy cities. And then Einstein spent the rest of his natural life trying to get them to use it for something else, please. And he even used to tell the press, no, I never told people that. But his original letter to Franklin Delano Roosevelt is a matter of record. And I have read that letter. And it did say, dear Mr. President, there is a development in the field of physics which could be employed in warfare and could destroy whole cities and their entire populations. He did say that. And he spent the rest of his life sad about that fact. and trying to do something about it. He spent the rest of his life trying to get organizations of scientists together who would put a stop on the use of this material. Well, that was the most notable man in the subject. What about the rest of us? Somehow or another, man has developed a weapon of which he himself, as an individual, is so afraid that he really will not express a very sound opinion on the subject. He flinches. He flinches. He doesn't want to confront this thing. It's too painful. Kills people too dead. His body vaguely remembers what this is all about. And they keep on blowing bombs off. They keep on blowing them off in the United States. They keep on blowing them off in Australia. Over in Russia. The only country which is wise on this subject and earned its wisdom in a gruesome way is Japan. And Japan right now is counting a number of rentgen, which is the radioactive presence in an area that's measured by rentgen. And it's counting the rentgen over its skies, and it's protesting to every nation on Earth and the United Nations and anybody else who will listen, and saying our population right now has been brought up to a point where it is dangerous to our people, to our whole population. Well, there is a country that knows what it is to be atom-bombed. And it's screaming. These screams are not published very widely, but they're published. Now, the next thing about it is how much information do we have about radiation poisoning in general of the atmosphere of Earth? How much information do we actually have? Well, I'll tell you the kind of government bulletin that comes out. This is not any matter of top secret, this and that. You understand, I have in my possession no secret information of any kind relating to atomic fission. And I would have it audited out if I did. But here we have a bulletin saying, public worry over the last bomb explosion is unfounded. The fallout is being carefully watched. Let's read that again. The fallout is being carefully watched. So I went around and I said, what about this? What is the fallout doing? Oh, well, I don't know anything about that. It's being watched. Well, that's fine. Now, how much fallout is there? Oh, it's all being watched. Well, who cares who's watching it? Listen, you can sit on the side of an arena and watch a woman being eaten up by a lion, too. But that doesn't mean that it's a good show. Evidently, they're of the opinion that if everybody carefully watches the fallout, nothing's going to happen. How about watching the arsenic go into the London water supply? Same thing. Supposing Londoners started to drop dead from arsenic poisoning in the water mains, you know, and the government issued a bulletin, the London County Council issued a bulletin, and they said, I don't see why you're so worried about the arsenic in the water supply because all of the reservoirs are being carefully watched. And every time some is put in, it's put in very carefully watched. Is this idiotic? Now, in the first place, there's practically nothing known about radiation poisoning of an atmosphere. This is the only planet they've had to work on this time. And they haven't any prior examples. And they work best on prior examples. So they will know when they reach a saturation point of gamma in the atmosphere of Earth, when Earth no longer supports life. I've been told that. And I look everywhere I can look to find somebody who will make a sensible statement. Just sensible. Now, I actually advanced this interesting thing. Do you know that it is atomic dust gathering in the ionosphere and the stratosphere, which brings about the condition of re-stimulation, influenza and other things, broadly around the area of a bomb explosion. Do you know that is the case? Well, everybody'd know that. No, no, no. Have you made any experiments? Well, no, we watched the fallout carefully. We give up about that point because actually better experiments and observations are being made right here in London with bathtubs on roofs. Now, here and there amongst the public, people have gotten interested in this subject, and they have started to measure the amount of gamma in rainfall with bathtubs on their apartment house roofs. I tell you, when this man in the streets, you might say, goes home at night and does experiments to test the amount of gamma in the atmosphere, and officialdom doesn't seem to know, we have a very odd state of affairs. But here and there in the society at this time, we evidently do have some chaps who have become suspicious of all of this learned watching the fallout carefully. And they're finding that the count, the gamma count, in rainwater, after a rain and so forth, is much, much higher than when it's a little bit present, you know, after a thunderstorm, but it's now uniformly much higher than that. It is significantly high. Now, what do we mean by a count? What do we mean by a count? It's how many rentgen, that is to say, a measurement of force, are present at any given instant, in any given area. You take a meter, you might say, well, go ahead, as crudely as this, you take a meter that registers it, and you hold it up to a given area, and it goes clickety, 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 click. You know, Geiger counters go clickety, clickety, click all the time anyway. They go tick, 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 tick. You listen to a Geiger counter, and you get it near some radiation, and it goes tick, 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 tick. You get a little closer to it, and it goes brrrr. And that is the type of meter which is used. They're very easy to come by. People are making fortunes today selling Geiger counters all over the world. These do measure a certain amount of radiation. Well, what is radiation? Radiation is the particle which emanates from an explosion, or a particle which emanates from radium or uranium. But it's a particle emanating. That is all it is. Now, when you make a big explosion, you get lots of particles emanating that go right on emanating. When you have a small deposit of uranium, you have particles emanating, of course, but you have to be close to it, and they have a tendency to die down. But how about this explosion? Here's this tremendous amount of plutonium goes up, and this tremendous amount of gamma, and its associated particles go out in all directions. How far does it go, and how long does it continue? Nobody knows. But this is an interesting point. If we were merely throwing arsenic into the air, or throwing London fog into the air, it dissipates. It goes away. Something happens to it. It dies down. It falls into the sea. It does other things. A person who is hurt by fog today doesn't necessarily have any effect from it next week, any greater, you see. Just because he takes a little bit of fog into his system doesn't mean that he will get a cumulative effect. He gets over it, and then he gets some more fog, and he gets over that, and he gets some more fog, and gets over that, and he goes on living. This isn't true of gamma. This isn't true of radiation, and this is what makes it different, and this is the only thing that really makes it different. The cumulative effect means this. We will say that somebody is going to be exposed. This is not exactly correct, but it gives you the idea. He's exposed to 300 rentgen of radiation on Tuesday. Next Tuesday, he's exposed to 300 rentgen of radiation. The following Tuesday, he's exposed to 300 rentgen. He has now been exposed to 900 rentgen. It doesn't go away. You see this? See? It isn't a London fog on Tuesday, and he's breathing again by Friday, and another London fog, and so on. It's just a London fog. He's getting one fog at a time. With gamma, this isn't what happens. He gets 300 rengen, and then he gets another 300 rengen, and it doesn't matter whether they're a year apart or 2 days apart. They add. It's cumulative, in other words. It's additive. All right. So they throw this amount of gamma into the upper atmosphere by a huge explosion, and then a few weeks later throw another one up into the atmosphere, and then a few weeks later throw another one up into the upper atmosphere, and a few weeks later throw another one. It isn't a question of will the rain clear that gamma out. It is a question of how many people did you expose? How far was the exposure felt? See, that is what it's a question of. It ceases to be a question, actually, of the presence of the gamma, or whether it goes away and falls into the sea and poisons all the fish for Japan or something. That's not the point. The point is by those flashes and by its presence in the air, how much has it permitted to accumulate in the populace? That is the point. And this is not one of these points that's easily grasped. Now, it so happens that they're exploding this stuff at a very fantastic rate without paying too much attention. They see that it disappears. But because they cannot measure the tiny effect, they can only measure it on a cumulative basis. And then they will only know when everybody gets good and sick. This is one of those things that you don't learn by experience. There is nothing in atomic radiation that can be learned by experience. If there's ever an atomic war, everybody will now know how to take care of an atomic war. That's for sure. They'll all be dead. But they'll all know how to take care of an atomic war. There'll be 3 light years on the other side of Earth sitting there saying, well, what do you know? You don't get a second crack at it. Here on Earth, they did bomb a couple of cities with a very small, minor missile. This was a small missile. Now, those bombings have not really served us in very good stead. They haven't learned as much as they should have learned from those. The first thing they should have learned with those is that it isn't a good weapon. That's the first thing they should have learned. But they haven't learned these things. What really does happen when one of these bombs goes off? Well, I could take a half a dozen brand new diplomas, all polished up, nuclear physicists, and toss them that question. Exactly what happens in the atmosphere of Earth when a bomb explodes? Oh, you would hear as many answers as there were physicists. And it would be nothing but speculation, and they would have nowhere to go for any reference. See, it's just speculation. Well, I'll tell you one of the things that happens that they don't know that happens. You get a flash in the ionosphere. Although the thing has exploded in Russia only, there is some slight evidence to support the fact that the entire ionosphere of Earth flashes at that moment. Just like that. So it really ceases to be a problem of fallout. It would be a problem of initial exposure if this were true. Now, nobody's made any tests to find out if that is true, because the instruments to test it would have to be very delicate indeed. You see, this wouldn't be much of a flash. What is the atmosphere count over London at this moment in terms of rengen? These figures aren't released. Maybe somebody around London knows. Maybe somebody tests this. I don't know. But they know what it is over Japan at this moment. Nobody's exploding bombs over Japan. Japan's just getting the air which is going by from other countries. Hence around 200 rengen. Do you know how much a human body can stand without being sick? 200 rengen. Can it stand 300? No, it gets sick. Or thereabouts. It'll start to feel some little effect from it. Now, about 500 rengen. Of course, that's really getting up there. You could actually keep exploding bombs on Earth until you had built an atmosphere count which was constantly, let us say, 300 rengen. If you did that, everybody on Earth would have intestinal upsets, influenza, and would be too apathetic to even go to work. If you had a continuous count of this. See what this problem's all about? It's not a very happy thing to think about. It's not a very cheery thing for me to be talking about this Monday afternoon. But there is very crudely put and without much effort to be highly technically accurate, there is more or less the picture that the atomic bomb presents. It isn't whether or not they shouldn't go on wasting plutonium. It isn't whether or not the fallout is watched or isn't watched, or whether we pollute certain areas of Earth. It's just how much saturation can the atmosphere of Earth take, and with continuous exposure, how much can the individuals on Earth be subjected to without becoming entirely ill and incompetent. You see, the main danger from an atomic bomb isn't war. The main danger from an atomic bomb is that everybody, by this higher cult, just becomes ill, and they all become ill, and they take a couple of years to kick the bucket. And that would be the whole population of Earth. It's highly doubtful if with modern bombs, Russia could bomb the United States, or the United States bomb Russia, without also killing, regardless of enemy retaliation, everybody in the United States, and everybody in Russia. And also, quite incidentally, everybody in England, Italy, China, Burma. See this? They keep thinking in terms of TNT bombs, and this is not a problem in TNT bombs. We know about TNT bombs. Once the bombing raid is over, it's over. Well, that's not true with atomic radiation. Once the bombing raid is over, then people distant from the area begin to wonder. And then they get sick. And then they wonder what the devil's happening now. Now, there's no sense in painting a terribly black picture of this, because it couldn't be any blacker. The atomic bomb is not a good war weapon. It never has been, and it never will be. Nothing is a good weapon which is unlimited and against which there is no defense. The governments of Earth decay and fall apart when we get into this kind of a situation where you have unlimited weapons, terribly unlimited weapons. And these weapons, of course, having no defense, make an impossibility of central government. Central governments cease to exist. Do you know what the first unlimited weapon of which we have any record was? It was the horseman and the sword. A man mounted on a horse with a long sword, and there was nothing could stand against him. There were no walls, there was nothing. And about 1500 BC, this fellow erupted out of the steppes of Russia into Europe, and there was no stable government in Europe until about 1200 BC when somebody built a wall. They built a wall around a town, and then they could have a town, because cavalry cannot operate in the vicinity of strong fortifications. But up to that time, they had no fortifications. So you had an unlimited weapon, and you had nothing but chaos. No governments could exist anywhere. All of a sudden, a body of cavalry would stand up, against which there was no defense whatsoever, and just sweep through the entire area and burn everything down. This was Europe for 200 or 300 years back there in the BCs. Now, what? Was there another one? Well, after the catapult came along and managed to pulverize walls, we still hadn't really upset things. See, there was still some defense. And there really hasn't been another one of these things until now. There's no defense against this bomb. No defense at all. So is it a good weapon? No. It's hardly classifiable as a weapon at all. You say retaliation is a deterrent. Because the United States knows that Russia can bomb it, and because Russia knows the United States can bomb it if either of them start a war, is the silliest thinking that anybody ever called thinking. It is silly in the extreme. It's silly for this reason only. How will the United States ever know if the bombs came from Russia? So what do we have? What do we have? We have a bomb falls on Washington. You mean somebody's going to run out and pick up any pieces of the case to identify it as Russian? No. All of a sudden, the U.S. is going to say, all right, we've been attacked, attack Russia. Look, maybe it was the Argentine that attacked the U.S. Nobody will know that. So where goes this retaliation? There is no such thing. Furthermore, what retaliation could there be? More bombs. But the bomb bombed into Russia is just as fatal to the U.S., as Russian bombs bombed into the United States are fatal to Russians. Where did anybody get the idea that this silly thing was a weapon? Now, maybe in an A-bomb stage, when nobody else had one, you could take a small country like Japan, which was in a state of being mopped up anyhow, and drop a couple of bombs real quick and discourage them. Maybe it worked. But not a lot of people got bombs. Is the thing a weapon? No, it's not a weapon. And its very existence today is embarrassing foreign affairs for several countries. They don't dare engage in a police warfare to clean up some little minor area. They don't dare engage in it because it might lead to an atomic war. Therefore, they can't use the small weapons that they have ordinarily used to carry out their police operations around the world. Honest. It's one of these problems that people just go mad with and then eventually conceive to be no problem at all. Now, let me tell you something. Very often, people drop below a level with problems. But although the problem hasn't diminished, they are in apathy about it. I'll give you an example of this. One of our own staff processed on a problem mother could be to you. Now, this is an example of below apathy. And if you're not interested in atomic bombs, you'll be interested in this piece of Scientology. Below apathy. Problem mother could be to me? Oh, I don't know. Maybe problem of eating ice cream, you know, without getting some on my tie. Yeah, that's a problem mother could be to me, you know. Another problem mother could be to you? Oh, I don't know. She's a pretty good old girl. There's nothing wrong with her. Problems he could be to me. Well, I don't know. I guess the problem of waiting for a streetcar. Having to wait 5 or 10 minutes for a streetcar. Problem minor. Well, all right, now let's see. Problem mother could be to me. Ow. Well, I don't know. The whole universe caved in on me simultaneously. Look at that quick change. That's a fascinating one. Now, you'll see that in cases. The fellow says, do you have any present time problems? No, don't have any present time problems. Life is fine. Well, now, let's think it over. Has anything been worrying you lately? No, everything is fine. And yet, as you process this person, you're aware of the fact that there is some kind of a present time problem that's interrupting this session. So you would go at it a little heavier. This is a very recent and a very important discovery, by the way, this below apathy. The thetan goes on south. We get to the end of the tone scale and we keep going south. And there he is. Present time problem? No. Well, is there anything happening around you these days? Oh, nothing. Wife's divorcing me, but that doesn't worry me. I've been expecting that for years. Oh, your wife's divorcing you. Well, now can you give me a problem of comparable magnitude to that? Oh, sure. Missing lunch. Well, give me another problem of comparable magnitude to it. Well, I don't know. Busting a shoelace. Well, give me another problem of comparable magnitude to that. I don't know. It's too big. You got the idea there. A person actually can get into a state of mind where he says, I'm totally numb on this particular subject. I don't know anything about it, and it doesn't relate to me. I imagine some chap being led to the scaffold can get in the same frame of mind. They're dragging him along to the scaffold, and he asks the executioner for a chew of tobacco, and I lead him up on the scaffold. You'd like to make a farewell address? No. Everything's fine. Lovely day, isn't it? Steps over on the trap door, and they fit the rope around his neck, and he says, wait a minute, I'm being hanged. See, he just found it out. Well, that's not exactly the same case. Because the fellow we're talking about is being hanged all the time and never does discover it. That's what we mean is below apathy. Well, now, if you look at the atomic problem as a problem that's below apathy, perhaps you'll be able to understand it. That's certainly as close as anyone will ever come to understanding it. If an atomic bomb is this ferocious, it really isn't a bomb. It's a sort of a I don't know. It's the same kind of a game as Russian roulette. You know what Russian roulette is, you know? Same kind of a game. Let's see, I will bomb England tomorrow. Yes, let's bomb England. He's saying in the same sentence, let's kill off everybody in our own country. Now, people go along fatuously with this. They think everybody wants to survive. Get that? Governments are sort of stuck with this idea. They threaten criminals with death as a penalty, on the theory that it is a penalty, and that life imprisonment is less penalizing. Whereas most criminals that you ask about this and so forth, they would rather get knocked off. You get the idea here. If everybody was interested in only survival, and there was no succumb edited into it any place, and nobody had the ambition to succumb, then this reasoning about the bomb would be true. See, then we'd say we could have this thing around with impunity because nobody wants to use a weapon that'll kill everybody on earth. See? But how about the guy that can only succumb, huh? How about the Russians that used to go into the barn and feel sad and then set fire to it and burn it down on themselves? Well, you didn't know Russians did that, but they do. How about some guys out in the Bible Belt in the United States? You listen to them talk very long and you say, where did this guy... You know, this guy'd have a new thought if I told him about survival. He wants to succumb. He thinks everybody else wants to succumb. He thinks that that's the only thing he could possibly do is succumb. You see, let's all die off quick. In other words, such peoples do exist. They're on the reverse vector. At first in Dianetics, we thought there was just survival. But survival has its dichotomy, succumb. And there are people who wish to succumb on all dynamics. Right straight down the whole list. Now, if this is the case, then the atom bomb is not a safe bomb to have around in the world. It's not safe. Just because it'd kill off everybody in the world would be the best reason for somebody to use it. Now, it would actually take us, who have some conversance with the human mind, to understand the limitations and the safeguards connected with this bomb. The limitations of its use are simply that it cannot be used. But this does not mean that it will not be used. Other limitations are that the pollution of Earth's atmosphere could result in very, very strenuous punishment for the population of Earth. If anybody knows this story completely, then I do not know his name. The data is not widely and generally held. The situation is not in good hands. Undoubtedly, the chaps who are handling the situation are doing their best. Undoubtedly, this is true. But with these streams of bombs going off, one right after the other, I don't think the best is good enough. Now, do we have any personal acquaintance with this? Yes, we do. A number of tests have already been made in an effort to proof the body against reacting to radiation in Scientology. This is very intimate to our work. Very intimate. Now, although the data I give you on the bomb and on pollution and radiation is as vague as it is, the data which I will give you now on Scientology's place in this is not vague. Now we're on ground we know. And we can say this, that at this time we do not have a process which will proof a body against a bomb. In other words, we cannot process somebody who will then not suffer extremely from radiation. That we evidently, at this time, cannot do. But we can take a burn, which would be fatal within about 40 days, and cure it. You understand that? Standard routine processing does that. A burn that would ordinarily result in death in 40 days. This I know we can do. 20 days, I don't think we can do it at this time. That is, a burn that would result in death in 20 days, I do not think we can do it. Not yet. As far as exteriorizing a thetan and accustoming him to the idea of radiation, yes, we can do this. This we can do. But not a body. As far as somebody who would merely have a pair of sore eyes for a week, that's not. That's not. That's 5 minutes processing. I see he's processing every day. You say, spot the spot where you saw the flash. Where are you now? Spot the spot where you saw the flash. Where are you now? Spot the spot where you saw the flash. Where are you now? He says, my eyes are off. I mean, it's that simple. Now, that we can handle one on an immediate flash basis, and that we can handle a burn which would result in death in 40 days, does, however, give us hope that we may discover more data on this that makes it possible for us to proof a body against atomic radiation. It's just a hope. That's all we've got, though. And boy, that's the thinnest hope you ever heard. That's like a long shot in a race, you know, 180 to 1. That's a real thin hope. Now, our acquaintance with it is not a textbook acquaintance. There's a group of us right here at this Congress. We call ourselves the Phoenix Survivors. The count at Phoenix was evidently around 300 rentgen. Day after day after day after day. With Lord knows, I don't know, 100 or 200 atomic bombs were shot off in Nevada while we were in Phoenix. You wonder why the Hazi moved out of Phoenix, Arizona. That is why. That area is too hot. The area was sufficiently hot that nobody could prospect for uranium there. Everything counted. Everything counted. You come in and you've got a Geiger counter and you turn it on to find out if its batteries are alive. And you point it over toward the piano and the piano's hot. That's right. And so there are a few of us that will go before the rest of you. That's what it amounts to. Because when they started flashing them off over here in Russia and Australia and so forth, this particular crew got sick. The rest of you didn't get sick. Why? We were closer to continuous radiation over a longer period of time than other people. We're just ahead of the game a little bit. None of us have ever thought to be processed upon this particular thing as an emergency, you know, an assist. Nevertheless, this could be done, and undoubtedly we will do it, and we will get this thing solved and taped. But right now we don't have it taped, even vaguely. And we have, these few of us, a foretaste of exactly what would be waiting for the human race. You'd get awful damn sick. Nausea, terror feeling at the pit of the stomach, headaches, fever, and then after a while something that resembles a cold. And then this goes, temperature goes up and down on this, and so on. And then that passes away, and you get well, or you get almost well, and somebody blows another bomb off. Now, we then know, to some slight degree, what we're talking about. From two angles, some of us have had subjective reality on this. Last February, during the experiments and so forth, I thought I'd knock this body off. I thought that was that. And it took me about, oh, I don't know, 2-3 weeks to pull out of the woods on that one. And we can see that there's coordination in this, and we can see also what will be necessary in terms of research and investigation in order to do more about this. But part of our research and investigation, I feel, should be directed in the direction of, boys, why don't you knock off exploding them for a little while, till we find out what is happening. You know, just no more than that. We merely said, let's just knock it off. And then we'll discover what is going on here. But they're not doing that. They keep experimenting with them. And it's the last atomic scientist that was fired from the... he was fired from the Atomic Energy Commission, U.S., for saying he didn't like this, named Dr. Will Lapp. He said 1962... was the pollution deadline. He said after that, he said the place would get uninhabitable. Too hot. Everything would start to count. And keep on counting from there on out. Now, we are facing a problem of magnitude, and this problem is, however, in the process of solution. It is in the process of solution. As I stand here before you wiping my nose, and I'm standing here wiping my nose in front of you just because of this same thing I'm talking to you about. I just had too heavy a radiation dosage. That's not all there is to it. You take somebody who studied the stuff, somebody who has done processing on it, somebody who has been messing around on it, why, he, of course, gets heavier accumulation than anybody else. That's all there is to it. Just as nonsensical as that. Not very dangerous. It's just awfully uncomfortable. You know, somebody wrote a great poem one time that wound up, I think it's The Straw Man. And the world isn't going to end with a bang. It's going to end with a whimper. Remember? Well, the way I look at it, I think that's what's going to happen. The world won't end with a bang. It'll end with a whimper of everybody overdosed with radiation, standing around with screaming noses, being very sick at their stomachs. Grim view, isn't it? But that's why you have a HASI, and that's why you have an organization, and that's why the pounds and dollars which go into the organization have to go on into the organization, because we do undertake research, investigation of this character. It does cost a little something to do that. And we do a better job per unit of cash than any other organization on earth, and I can certainly assure you of that by a ratio of about 1,000 to 1. And we have the situation in view. We are looking at it fairly carefully, and we aren't just observing fallout. We're trying to find out how you proof a body, how you proof a thetan, how you make a person capable of withstanding atomic radiation. And if I last long enough, maybe we'll win. But this we see as number one problem on Earth today. Because if we don't solve that one, there's no sense in solving any of the others. It is not a situation that you go and beat your head in about particularly. It's simply a situation that you keep your eyes open about and do a little propagandizing on the subject of. You know, if you just mention to enough people, do you think they ought to be setting off all those bombs before they know what they're doing with those bombs, you might possibly get a public reaction of sufficient magnitude that governments, even governments, would be able to listen and stop on the line. But during this Congress, the chaps who were out in Phoenix and so forth, because of the A-tests in Russia and in Australia and so forth, have been a bit upset. We have a vested interest in it. We have a personal interest in it. We don't expect you to have that for years. But this is the atomic bomb situation. I hope I've clarified it a little bit. I hope you find my remarks not too depressing. But I don't know very much about it. I probably know more than other people, but I don't know anything. And now you know a little something about it anyway, don't you?
Yes.
Well, now don't get depressed about this. I see you all look rather depressed. Because, as a matter of fact, you probably won't get chronic influenza for almost 2 or 3 years. And by that time, if we last long enough, we'll have it all solved. So that's the way it is. Thank you very much.